I am Neo. Welcome into the Skeptic Arena. You can reach the Skeptic Arena on the net at theskepticarena.com. Today's subject, babies thrown from rooftop in India. In early May 2008, news stations everywhere were showing video of babies being thrown off the rooftop of the Parliament building in Solapur in the state of Maharashtra, India. 50 feet above the ground, where a group of men held a large blanket ready to catch the infants as they were dropped. This was done to bring the babies good luck and health. Michael Jackson created an international controversy when he dangled his baby out the window of his fifth-floor hotel room in Berlin, Germany. But if he had done that same thing in this town in India, he would have been criticized for not letting go of the baby. This custom has been going on for 500 years, and the organizers claim there have never been any accidents. You have to be a complete, utter moron to believe that. The religious makeup of India is approximately 80% Hindu and 13% Muslim. This custom is practiced at Muslim temples in the city of Solapur. But sometimes Hindu couples participate as well, especially those who have been blessed with a baby after praying at the Muslim shrine. So if this practice is valid, the babies of Solapur should be the luckiest and healthiest in the world, since I know of nowhere else it is done. Do you believe that is true? I don't. If anyone wants to prove something in the world of the paranormal or religious, here is a great opportunity. Just design and conduct a scientific study to prove that these babies really are healthier and luckier than those that don't get dropped, and you will be famous. If it's true. Regarding the preposterous claim that no one has ever been injured, some things are just so absurd they don't require rebuttal. Call these organizers what they are, liars. But I can see why no one will say anything against them. If you had to live there, the last thing you would want is a bunch of angry imams looking for revenge and knowing your name. Now let's discuss the majority religion of India, Hinduism, one of the Earth's four major religions. Each has approximately 1 billion members. The others are Islam, Catholicism, and the non-Catholic Christians, mainly Protestants. Most of the Hindus live in India, but other countries with large Hindu populations include Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, Pakistan, Indonesia, Malaysia, Singapore, Mauritius, Fiji, Suriname, Guyana, Trinidad and Tobago, United Kingdom, and Canada. So Hinduism is found in most places on earth. It contains a vast body of scriptures, divided as Sruti, which means revealed, and Smriti, which means remembered. They provide guidance on the practice of Dharma, which means religious living. The most important of these scriptures in authority and antiquity are the four Vedas. They are Rig Veda, Sama Veda, Yajur Veda, and Atharva Veda. The concluding portion of the Vedas are the Upanishads. This is their equivalent of the Bible and the Quran. Only instead of one book, they have many. Prominent themes in Hindu beliefs include Dharma, which are ethics and duties, Samsara, the continuing cycle of birth, life, death, and rebirth, karma, action and subsequent reaction, moksha, liberation from samsara, and the various yogas. Most Hindus believe that the spirit or soul, the true self of every person, called the Atman, is eternal. According to monistic and pantheistic theologies of Hinduism, this Atman is ultimately indistinct from Brahman, the Supreme Spirit. The goal of life, according to the Advaita schools, is to realize that one's Atman is identical to Brahman, the Supreme Soul. The Upanishads state that whoever becomes fully aware of the Atman as the innermost core of one's own self realizes their identity with Brahman and thereby reaches moksha, which is liberation or freedom. For Christians and Muslims, this is going to be a little difficult because it's a much more complex religion. Not only do they have many, many scriptures rather than the few, the Bible has many scriptures, but it's all been pulled into one book. The Quran likewise has the Haditha and other sources, but mainly relies on the Quran itself. But in the Hindu religion, they have a much greater variety of scriptures and also a much larger number of gods and lesser deities, which we'll be getting to. Other dualistic schools understand Brahman as a supreme being who possesses personality and worship him or her as the supreme being. But they can worship him as Vishnu, Brahma, Shiva, or Shakti, depending on the sect. We call those denominations, such as the Protestant religions that are divided into so many denominations. They all have the basic same beliefs in the Bible and Christ, but they have very differing views on a lot of the details, which is why they started their own denominations. And it's no different in India. They have very many different sects, and they worship in very different ways, but they're all centered on these major gods, and they don't have Christ, they don't have the things from the Quran, but they do all agree on their own scriptures, and then that divides into the various sects. There are also schools like the Samkhya, which have atheistic leanings. Now, I don't know if we have any denominations here in the United States that would have atheistic leanings. If they do, they would be called atheists and they wouldn't be a denomination. So that's kind of a new twist. Earliest evidence for Hinduism dates to 5500 BC. So that's 7,500 years ago. Or, to put it in terms that Christians can understand, 1,500 years before God created the earth. I'll let you guys fight that one out among yourselves. Most Hindu scriptures are not typically interpreted literally. So now we have some similarities with the Muslims and the Christians. Muslims and Christians divide, I wouldn't say equally, but they divide into major groups over the literal interpretations of their texts. Obviously, Christians do not interpret the Bible literally in every aspect. If they did, they would be stoning their children every time the children talked back. They would be enslaving people like they used to do. So it's clear that even the Christians who take the Bible literally don't take every single thing in it literally. And the same can be said of the Muslims. There are many Muslims, very peaceful Muslims, who don't believe in killing infidels simply because they have a different God. In fact, as I just pointed out, 13% of India is Muslim, and they are not attacking the Hindus in mass, trying to convert them. which is a good idea when you've got 13% and the other side has 80%, it's not likely you're going to be very successful. More importance is attached to the ethics and metaphorical meanings derived from them. Well, that sounds similar to what Christians and Muslims do with their texts. Hinduism has a developed system of symbolism and iconography to represent the sacred in art, architecture, literature, and worship. These symbols gain their meaning from the scriptures, mythology, or cultural traditions. The symbol Om, which represents Para Brahman, and the swastika sign, which symbolizes auspiciousness, have grown to represent Hinduism itself. I hope you were paying attention to the last thing I said, the swastika sign. Just because the Nazis used it doesn't mean that that's the only meaning that it has. The same symbol that's used to terrorize people in the United States and in areas where there are Jewish populations is the same sign that is used in India to symbolize auspiciousness, which does not have a negative connotation. It all depends on the context in which it is used. The afterlife. Hindus believe in reincarnation. Now that's quite different than the beliefs of Muslims and Christians, except that if they believe in Christ, they believe they will be reincarnated, but not the same way that Hindus believe it. Hindus believe in reincarnation here on earth. Christians and Muslims believe it'll happen in an afterlife with a different body. The basic belief is that a person's fate is determined according to his deeds. These deeds in Hinduism are called karma. A soul who does good karma in his life will be awarded with a better life in the next incarnation. Souls who do bad karma will be punished for their sins. If not in this incarnation, then in the next one. And will continue to be born in this world again and again. The good souls will be liberated from the circle of rebirth and get redemption, which is called moksha, meaning freedom. Rituals. The vast majority of Hindus engage in religious rituals on a daily basis. Most Hindus observe religious rituals at home. However, observation of rituals greatly vary among regions, villages, and individuals. Devout Hindus perform daily chores such as worshiping at the dawn after bathing, usually at a family shrine, and typically includes lighting a lamp and offering foodstuffs before the images of deities. It also includes recitation from religious scripts, singing devotional hymns, meditation, chanting mantras, reciting scriptures, etc. A notable feature in religious ritual is the division between purity and pollution. Religious acts presuppose some degree of impurity or defilement for the practitioner, which must be overcome or neutralized before or during ritual procedures. Purification, usually with water, is thus a typical feature of most religious action. Other characteristics include a belief in the efficacy of sacrifice and concept of merit, gained through the performance of charity or good works, that will accumulate over time and reduce sufferings in the next world. Hindu society has traditionally been categorized into four classes called varnas. This is the caste system. The highest caste is Brahman, and they are the priest caste. After them are the Kshatriya, who are the warriors. Third, the Vaishya caste, who are the business people. The lowest of the four castes are the Sudra, who are the common peasants and workers. However, they are not the lowest because below these four castes are the casteless, known as the untouchables. The four castes were not allowed to have any physical contact with the untouchables. Now, when I was mentioning about the Vaishya, the business people, that would include farmers, merchants, and all types of people who worked for a living. And as you might have guessed, the fourth and lowest of the four classes, the Shudras, were servants and laborers. Hindus and scholars debate whether the caste system is an integral part of Hinduism, sanctioned by the scriptures, or an outdated social custom. So that depends on which sect you're talking to. Now, the major Hindu gods, this is very important. In Christianity, we have Jehovah. In Islam, we have Allah. In Judaism, Yahweh. Back in the days of the Norsemen and the Greeks and the Romans, we had Zeus and Jupiter and all those guys. The Hindus have many. In total, there are over 330,000 supernatural beings if you add up all the scriptures in the various Hindu traditions. However, in the Christian religion, they also have countless thousands of saints and semi-deities as well. But the major Hindu gods can be summarized briefly. Brahma is the creator, and each of the three major gods has a wife, a goddess. Brahma's wife is Saraswati. She is the goddess of learning. Listed next, and I don't know that there's any specific order to these gods or any hierarchy, although I imagine Brahma, since he's the creator, probably came first. The next god is Vishnu, the preserver. He's married to Lakshmi, or maybe it's a civil union, I don't know. Lakshmi is the goddess of wealth and prosperity. And finally, the third major god is Shiva, the destroyer, whose goddess is Parvati, who appears either as Durga or Kali. Now the preserver, the middle of the three gods that I mentioned, whose original name was Vishnu, has incarnations. There have been 9 incarnations of Vishnu, because in order to preserve the earth, he has to come down and straighten it out every now and then because humans have screwed it up so bad. Krishna is one of those incarnations of Vishnu. Okay, many denominations of Hinduism teach that occasionally God comes to earth as a human being to help humans in their struggle toward enlightenment and salvation, which, as I mentioned earlier, is called moksha. Such an incarnation of God is called an avatar. In some respects, the Hindu concept of avatar is similar to the belief found in Christianity that God came to earth incarnated in the form of Jesus. However, whereas most Christians believe that God has assumed a human body only once, Hinduism teaches that there have been multiple avatars throughout history and that there will be more. Thus, Krishna, who is not only viewed as an incarnation but also a source of all incarnations, says, and now I'm quoting the god Krishna, "Whenever righteousness declines and unrighteousness increases, I make myself a body. In every age I come back to deliver the holy, to destroy the sin of the sinner, to establish righteousness." And the next topic will be the various denominations. Contemporary Hinduism traditionally has 4 major divisions: Saivism, Shaktism, Smartism, that's what it says, Smartism, and Vaishnavism. Hinduism is a very rich and complex religion. Each of its 4 denominations shares rituals, beliefs, traditions, and personal gods with one another. But each sect has a unique philosophy on how to achieve life's ultimate goal, which is moksha, liberation. A Hindu may follow the Dvaita philosophy, which stresses that Brahman and the soul are not the same. But each denomination fundamentally believes in different methods of self-realization and in different aspects of the one supreme God. However, each denomination respects and accepts all others, and conflict of any kind is rare. I've got to read that last part again. Any Christians or Muslims that download this podcast, just listen to this part. But each denomination fundamentally believes in different methods of self-realization and in different aspects of the one supreme God. However, each denomination respects and accepts all others, and conflict of any kind is rare. Could this religion be any more different than Christianity and Islam, with their thousands of years of war and murdering each other? Just for that reason alone, even if you don't believe in religion, that's got to be a huge improvement. To find out more about India, I recommend a website of the largest rationalist society in India. You can contact the president of the Indian Rationalist Society. His name is Sonal Idamaruku at indianrationalists.blogspot.com. Sonal Idamaruku became famous a short time ago, not in this part of the world, but in India, when he challenged one of the many frauds that India is so famous for, these witch doctors that claim they can kill people by putting spells on them. He made the guy look so bad on television that the guy told him that he would put a spell on him and kill him. Sonal accepted the challenge, and they decided that that night, 4 hours later, they would come back and he would allow himself to be killed if the witch doctor could actually do it. Over 200 million people tuned in. Even though India has over a billion people, I don't know that they all have TVs. So 200 million people, that means just about anyone with a television probably had it tuned to this event to watch this witch doctor use his powers to kill Sonal. He was getting so frustrated with all of his chants and all of his threats and everything, he had a knife in his hand. Since frauds know that they're frauds, his goal was to get Sonal to chicken out, and he was doing everything he could to scare him, but Sonal wouldn't bend. Earlier in the day, when they had the first telecast, he had done things like taken Sonal's head in his hands and pressed very hard, and they had to remind him that he wasn't allowed to hurt Sonal. He had to do it with his magic. And at night, he was using a knife, and he had the knife right next to Sonal's face. And I know he wanted so badly to kill him, but they made it clear that if he did, everyone would know that he did it and not his God. Obviously, nothing happened. So what the witch doctor said to try to salvage himself in front of the nation was that Sonal had a very powerful God protecting him, which must have sent 200 million people into hysterical laughter. Because Sonal reminded him that he was an atheist. There was no God to protect him. So that excuse fell pretty flat. But you can reach him at the website I gave you, indianrationalists.blogspot.com. Okay, now let's go to the calls and see if anybody... Let's let Rufus back into the arena. So, Rufus, what did you think of what happened in India?
Rufus doesn't have a lot to say. Rufus has just not got her wit with her today.
But you have to admit, that was probably the biggest audience in history to see that. That had to have some kind of effect on those superstitious people to actually see that this guy had... Because these guys go around India extorting money out of people by claiming to put spells on them, and then if you pay them money, they'll remove the spell, or they'll give you a potion. That's how they make their living. That's how they become wealthy. And it works on people who don't know better. And what the Rationalist Society of India is trying to do is help these poor, innocent people that are being defrauded out of their money. You might have heard what happened in Africa recently. In fact, if you download a podcast I did a couple weeks ago about the African Republic in the Congo, where they were stealing penises, they were killing witch doctors because they were saying that they were doing the same thing there. They would claim to make a man's penis disappear or shrink or become impotent, And then they would demand money to remove the spell. If that's true, then I don't have a lot of sympathy, although I know I don't think they should have been killed, but jail might have been an appropriate solution. But also, you could use that as an excuse to kill anyone you wanted just by claiming they're a witch, which is what happened in Europe and the United States during the witch burnings. So what you need is a trial with evidence, but there never are trials and evidence in these cases. So what the India Rationalist Society is trying to accomplish is to help the poor, innocent people who are being fooled by they call themselves witch doctors, gurus, whatever they call themselves. And he showed everybody that it's a hoax. In fact, he goes all over the country with a large group of students. And what they do is they take all these tricks that these godmen, as they're called, they know how the tricks are done, and they show everybody that it's not magic, that these people are being fooled, and they show them exactly how they're being fooled. The same function is done in the United States by an ex-magician named James Randi. He serves the same purpose in this country, showing up frauds for what they are by demanding that they prove what they claim. And in fact, he has a $1 million prize that has been offered for well over a decade to anyone who can prove scientifically any supernatural event. And so far, no one's ever been able to prove it and get the $1 million. And Sanal Ida Maruku serves the same function in India that Randi serves here in America. And they're fighting for the poor, innocent people who are being tricked. And yet, it's strange that these men are so hated. Of course, the people who hate them the most are the people who are having their frauds exposed. Randy's website is www.randy with an I. He spells his last name with an I, .org. Okay, let me go to a couple of quotes to wind up the show here. I take a couple of famous people every week, and before giving you their quotes, I give you a little background so that you'll know a little bit about the person before hearing their quote. And the first quote comes from Andrei Sakharov, born 1921 and died in 1989 at the age of 68. He was a Soviet nuclear physicist. He is said to be the father of the Soviet hydrogen bomb and an advocate of human rights and a Nobel Peace Laureate. You wonder why these things go together. As a Soviet hydrogen bomb expert, you wouldn't expect him to be a Nobel Peace Laureate. But that's what got him into trouble. The Soviets wanted his expertise for weapons to kill, or they would probably say to defend themselves, since the United States had the bombs. But he hated what he produced, and he became a peace advocate. And for that, he was exiled by the Soviet government for fighting for democracy and for human rights. He's quite a man in anybody's book. And his quote: "Freedom of thought is the only guarantee against an infection of peoples by the mass myths, which in the hands of treacherous hypocrites and demagogues can be transformed into bloody dictatorships." Well, after reading that quote, I think I can see why they exiled him, since that pretty much describes Stalin's rule. If I had a hat, I would take it off to that man. Another very famous individual who just died a couple months ago, Arthur C. Clarke, born 1917, died 2 months ago at the age of 90. Arthur C. Clarke was a prolific author, most famous for the novel 2001: A Space Odyssey and movie of the same name. During World War II, he served in the British Royal Air Force as a radar instructor. His proposal for a satellite communications system earned him a nomination in 1994 for the Nobel Prize. He was again nominated for a Nobel Prize in 1999 for literature. He lived the last 50 years of his life in Sri Lanka, where his favorite hobby was scuba diving. Well, it's good that we picked Arthur C. Clarke today, as that ties right in with the area of the world that I was discussing. Sri Lanka, right off the coast of India. In 1959, at the age of 41, he contracted polio and had to spend most of the rest of his life in a wheelchair, hence the love for scuba diving. His timing nearly parallels that of American President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who got polio at around the same age and was also wheelchair-bound for the rest of his life. He identified himself as an atheist and stated, "I don't believe in God or an afterlife." But he did admit to an affinity for Buddhism, which he did not consider a religion. I have two quotes from Arthur C. Clarke. The first, "Any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic." I think we could apply that to aliens. If they were sufficiently advanced compared to us, we would consider them magic. His second quote, "If I was a religious person, I would consider creationism nothing less than blasphemy. Do its adherents imagine that God is a cosmic hoaxer?" That's hoaxer, H-O-A-X-E-R. "Who has created that whole vast fossil record for the sole purpose of misleading mankind?" Rufus, any final thoughts on the show?
No, I just, you know, your shows just never cease to amaze me how parallel they are, they run with what is going on in America today. It doesn't matter how far you go back in history, there is always something there that is parallel. Says something about something.
But what you were saying is nothing changes. It's just different people assume the same roles and keep playing out the same roles.
Yes, it's just the same script over and over and over. Yes, I agree.
Well, that's what the Skeptic Arena plans to change.
Get a new script? Well, good. It's about time. I'm ready for a new script.
Well, the old script hasn't worked really well, in case you didn't. Well, I know you noticed. But a lot of people haven't noticed that the old script is full of holes and murder, slaughter, rape, robbery, slavery, and it hasn't changed. Just like you said, you hit it right on the head. We just have different names doing the same roles, and now we have the weapons to end everything. So if we don't change, I'll let you do the math.